In this episode, not so great expectations. This is Rendition, a modern retelling of timeless stories. Each week, you'll hear a medley of folk tales, ancient parables, and classic short fiction. We'll take this tour through folklore, literature, and the arts to reveal the fundamental themes that are still being reused today. Because the world has changed, but the human story remains the same. One of my favorite sayings, when you release expectations, you are free to enjoy things for what they are instead of what you think they should be. Think about it. Our expectations color every aspect of our lives, from the way the food tastes to how much we enjoy a roller coaster, and even how falling in love should feel like. And this color isn't always a flattering one. This episode contains three stories. In these stories, the characters fall prey to expectations, sometimes to their own expectations, and at other times they fall prey to the expectations of others around them. So, let's get rockin'. This first story is an old fable from the legendary poet Aesop. It's called The Man, the Boy, and the Donkey. One day, a man and his son were going with their donkey to the market. Well, as they were walking along, by his side a countryman passed them and said, "You fools! What is a donkey for but to ride on?" So the man put the boy on the donkey, and they went on their way. But soon, they passed a group of men, and one of them said, "See, look at that lazy youngster. He lets his father walk while he rides." So the man ordered his boy to get off, and he got on himself. But they hadn't gone far when they passed two women, one of whom said to the other, "Shame on that lazy man to let his poor little son just trudge along." Well, the man at this point didn't know what to do, but at last, he took his boy and sat him on the donkey along with him. By this time, they had come to the town, and the passersby began to jeer and point at them. The man stopped and asked what they were scoffing at. The men said, "Aren't you ashamed of yourself for overloading that poor donkey of yours, you and your hulking son?" The man and the boy, fed up, they got off and tried to think what to do. They thought and they thought, until at last, they cut down a pole and tied the donkey's feet to it, and raised the pole and the donkey to their shoulders. They went along this way, amid the laughter of all who met them, until they came to a bridge, when the donkey, getting one of his feet loose, kicked out and caused the boy to drop his end of the pole. In the struggle, the donkey fell over the bridge, and his forefeet, since they were tied together, because of this, he was drowned. That's how far it can go if one tries to please everyone. This next story is a short story from a master writer of the 19th century. His name was Guy de Maupassant. The story is called An Uncomfortable Bed. One One autumn, I went to spend the hunting season with some friends in a chateau over in the countryside. My friends were fond of practical jokes. I do not care to know people who are not. When I arrived, they gave me a princely reception, which at once awakened suspicion in my mind. They embraced me, made a big deal of my visit, and showered me with compliments, as if they expected to have great fun at my expense. I said to myself, "Look out, old ferret. They must have something in store for you." During the dinner, the cheerfulness was excessive, exaggerated in fact. I thought, here are people who have more than their share of amusement, and apparently without reason. They must have planned some really good joke. Assuredly, I am to be the victim of that joke. So pay close attention. During the evening, everyone laughed in an exaggerated fashion. I scented a practical joke in the air, as a dog smells game. But what could it be? I was watchful, restless. I did not let a word or a meaning or a gesture escape me. Everyone seemed to me an object of suspicion, and I even looked distrustfully at the faces of the servants. The hour struck for retiring to bed, and the whole household came to escort me to my room. Why? They called to me, "Good night." I entered the apartment, shut the door, and remained standing without moving a single step, holding the wax candle in my hand. I heard laughter and whispering in the corridor. Without doubt, they were spying on me. I cast a glance around the walls, the furniture, the ceiling, the floor. I saw nothing to justify suspicion. I heard persons moving about outside my door. I had no doubt they were looking through the keyhole. An idea came into my head. My candle may suddenly go out and leave me in darkness. Then I went across to the mantelpiece and lighted all the wax candles that were on it. After that, I cast another glance around me without discovering anything. I advanced with short steps, carefully examining the apartment. Nothing. I inspected every article, one after the other, still nothing. I went over to the window. The shutters, large wooden shutters, were open. I shut them with great care, and then drew the curtains, enormous velvet curtains, and placed a chair in front of them, so as to have nothing to fear from outside. Then I cautiously sat down. The armchair was solid. I didn't venture to get into the bed. However, the night was advancing, and I ended by coming to the conclusion that I was foolish. If they were spying on me, as I supposed, they must, while waiting for the success of the joke they had been preparing for me, have been laughing immoderately at my terror. So I made up my mind to go to bed. But the bed was particularly suspicious looking. I pulled the curtains. They seemed to be secure. All the same, there was danger. I was going perhaps to receive a cold shower both from overhead or perhaps the moment I stretched myself out to find myself sinking to the floor with my mattress. I searched in my memory for all the practical jokes of which I ever had experience, and I did not want to get caught. Ah, certainly not. Certainly not. Then I suddenly bethought myself of a precaution which I considered ensured safety. I caught hold of the side of the mattress gingerly and very slowly drew it toward me. It came away, followed by the sheet and the rest of the bedclothes. I dragged all these objects into the very middle of the room, facing the entrance door. I made my bed over again as best as I could, at some distance from the suspected bedstead and the corner which had filled me with such anxiety originally. Then, I extinguished all the candles and, groping my way, I slipped under the bedclothes. For at least another hour, I remained awake, startling at the slightest sound. Everything seemed quiet in the chateau. I fell asleep. I must have been in a deep sleep for a long time, but all of a sudden I was awakened with a start by the fall of a heavy body tumbling right on top of my own, and at the same time, I received on my face, on my neck, and on my chest a burning liquid which made me utter a howl of pain, and a dreadful noise, as if a sideboard laden with plates and dishes had fallen down. It almost deafened me. I was smothering beneath the weight that was crushing me and preventing me from moving. I stretched out my hand to find out what was the nature of this object. I felt a face, a nose, and a mustache. Then, with all my strength, I launched out a blow at this face. But I immediately received a hail of blows right back, which made me jump straight out of the soaked sheets and rush in my nightshirt into the corridor, the door of which I found open. Oh heavens, it was broad daylight. The noise brought my friends hurrying into my apartment, and we found, sprawling over my improvised bed, the dismayed manservant who, while bringing me my morning cup of tea, had tripped over this obstacle in the middle of the floor and fallen on his stomach, spilling my breakfast over my face, in spite of himself. The precautions I had taken in closing the shutters and going to sleep in the middle of the room had only brought about the practical joke I had really been trying to avoid from the beginning. Oh, how they all laughed that day. This next story is a really ancient one from the Indian subcontinent. Punjab is the region, to be exact. The story is called Love as Salt. A very long time ago, there lived a king and his three daughters. One day, the king wanted to find out which of his daughters loved him the most. So he called his daughters and asked, "How much do each of you love me, my dears?" The eldest daughter replied, "I love you as much as I love gold." The king was happy. The second one replied, "I love you as much as I love diamonds." On hearing this, the king was even happier. But the youngest daughter said, "I love you as much as I love salt, dear father." On hearing this, the king was furious. "How can you say something like that?" he shouted at his youngest daughter. "In your eyes, my value is only as much as mere salt? Salt?" He was so angry and humiliated that he banished his youngest daughter to the forest. Sad and dejected, the princess began to wander in the forest. Suddenly, she heard the sound of a horse galloping. Frightened, she hid in the hollow of a tree. The horse halted near the tree, and a young man came into sight. He had seen the princess hiding behind the tree. As soon as they both saw each other, they fell in love. "I am a trader," said the young man. "I live in the neighboring kingdom. What are you doing alone in this dense forest?" The princess then narrated her woeful story. "I love my father very much, but he doesn't understand," she sobbed. "One day he will," consoled the trader. Soon they were married, and the youngest princess lived in a mansion with her husband, the trader. Then, one day, it so happened that the king lost his way while hunting. For 2 days he kept wandering in the forest. Then, as fate would have it, he reached the trader's mansion. Hungry and tired, he approached the trader and sought his help. Although the trader knew that the king was none other than his father-in-law, he kept quiet about it. "I shall arrange for your food, your majesty," he said, and went to his wife, the princess. The trader told her about the king's arrival and asked her to prepare a feast. "But remember, all the dishes should be sweet," he instructed. So you see, even our expectation of what love feels like can cause us to behave in cruel ways. Look, I know that having expectations is a human necessity. After all, we're faced with hundreds of tiny decisions each day, and expectations free us up and free up our brain power for the big stuff. The danger comes when our expectations color every single corner of our canvas, as if different shades of whites, blacks, greens, blues, and reds didn't exist. Or even as if it were impossible to color outside the lines. Guys and gals, thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Rendition. I really appreciate you tuning in. Remember, if you want to get every episode downloaded automatically to your phone or to your iTunes, make sure to subscribe. We're available on Android, on iTunes, on the web, whatever you do, but subscribe. Or even on my website, go and subscribe. That way you can get the newsletter and you can get notified by email every time a new episode is released. You've been listening to Rendition. My name is Alex Cespedes. Thanks for tuning in.